Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. This is Ian Bruce. I'm Director of Marketing here at Cisternet. I thank you all very much indeed for attending our webcast today, including business service compliance and security with closed-loop SOA policy management. We're very fortunate to have two excellent speakers today, and my colleague Sean Klein here at Cisternet. He's Director of Product Marketing. And we also have Phil Wallstone, who is Senior Product Manager at Layer 7 Technologies. Before we get going, just a little housekeeping. We encourage you all to ask questions. The best way to do that, use the Q&A chat window. It's at the bottom right-hand corner of your browser. Please ask questions as you see fit, and we'll answer them in the sequence in which they were received. So please use the Q&A chat window there. With that, let's give some questions. Sean Klein, as I said, is a Senior Product Marketing Manager here at Cisternet. And we also have with us Phil Watson, who's Senior Product Manager at Layer 7 Technologies. Layer 7 Technologies helps enterprises accomplish secure and cost-effective business integration using XML and web services. With that, I'll hand over to Sean. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ian. And thank you all for joining us today. So let's dive right in, just in terms of format here or agenda for the day. I'm going to give a brief introduction, sort of the level set on governance and the governance interoperability framework, of which Layer 7 is in partnership with Cisternet. I'm then going to hand it over to my colleague, Phil Walton, from Layer 7, who's going to review some of our joint use cases leveraging the governance interoperability framework. And then I'll just kind of try to wrap it up the end and talk a little bit more about some of the benefits of GIFT Enterprise. So let's dive right in. One of the main motivations for moving to a services-oriented architecture is really a shift from application silos to shared services. In the world of application silos themselves, and interfaces to other systems is proprietary, so it's very slow and costly to move data and business functionality from one system to another. Motorola quoted in CIO magazine that the cost of their integrations have been reduced by a factor of 10 in some cases through SOA. So given that we're able to achieve these wonderful benefits and expose our business services as standards-based shared reusable assets, we do need careful, however, that we don't run into the world of siloed SOA, if it were. So essentially the idea here is that we need to have an approach, and part of that approach is around governance in our minds. Now let me jump up a level of abstraction a bit, because SOA governance can be perceived as, well, you know, how am I going to manage my SOA? How am I going to control my SOA? But in fact, if we look at the enterprise requirements, they're largely driven by higher-level goals, things like corporate governance. And so one example of that is Sarbanes-Oxley, where we need to establish internal controls and processes and have auditors, attestations, and certifications. And this, in turn, is going to drive IT governance. And so companies will turn to frameworks like ITIL, which discusses the requirements for setting objectives, providing direction for IT activities, and then measuring performance. And I think that one of the really interesting things about SOA governance is not only does it allow us to control our SOA in and of itself, but it really allows us to bridge corporate governance and IT governance. So we're going to talk about some of this, the ability to take standards-based metadata, so descriptions or data about the data about our services, creating that with the workflow in terms of how we're moving services and policies through their life cycles, and then talk about policy management and enforcement and how we can essentially automate some of the aspects of corporate governance and tie IT governance to corporate governance. In terms of SOA governance itself, to me, it's the organizational structure, the processes and the policies, or the rules and guidelines, if you will, to control your SOA. So this involves a series of activities in the SOA, lifecycle management, provisioning of new services, consumer provider governance, versioning, monitoring of SLAs, auditing and diagnostics, and other activities. So in this context, the concept of policy is critical. And that's the way policy defines the configurable rules and conditions that affect services. So a simplified definition of SLA governance is the definition, management, and enforcement of SLA policies. Now, there are different domains of policy enforcement. Organizations need to enforce policies as services are being created, somewhat of a design time view of the world, as well as when they're in operation, runtime. In fact, this is a little bit oversimplified. We could talk about deploy times as well. We could break this down even further. So if we just use this simple approach, some of the design time considerations are validating compliance to policy around interoperability, consistency, and say things like schema or namespaces, maybe dependency checking, security constraints at a design time level, things like this. When we move to the runtime, we need to talk about the notion of policy enforcement points. And so, in fact, that's really the intersection of the registry, which we'll be talking about, and policy enforcement points, particularly in the area of security and management. Now, policy enforcement points, in this case, are displayed as sort of an intermediary. That doesn't have to be the case. It could be more of an interceptor, where the intelligence is more at the endpoint. But here we're going to talk more in terms of intermediaries, and we're going to talk about how policy enforcement points can secure web services, they can help enforce SLAs, and they can also do mediation, routing, mapping, this type of thing. So how does the governance interoperability framework fit in? Well, what we tried to do with the governance interoperability framework was really to respond to the requests of our customers and prospects and folks in the industry who said that we need to have a means of communicating in some standardized way between various infrastructure services. And so we see here some examples of those infrastructure services and the business service registry. So in this sense, the business service registry becomes a system of record. It provides visibility into all aspects of an SLA, and it richly describes services. The benefit of GIFT Enterprise's implementing SLA is the ability to deploy proven and industry-leading products easily. And so this greatly improves SOA information quality and exchange. And so it supports governance across the entire enterprise in this way. Through GIFT, partners have the ability to publish services and associated policies to the BSR, to be alerted on changes within the registry, and they have access to data about the services or metadata about the range of services that make up the enterprise SOA. So we're going to drill into web services security and management a little bit here today, and you'll see some specific use cases around that. Just one level deeper framework is that there are currently three levels of interoperability supported by the GIF: user interface integration, control integration, and data integration. User interface integration consists of presenting a common view of service descriptions, characteristics, and policies, enabling visibility and management of the business service lifecycle. Control integration consists of alerting and notification integration, launching events and actions, and integration of business service governance and lifecycle management. And then finally, data integration consists of leveraging the business service registry as the primary service description, characteristic, and policy catalog. So by associating metadata with business services, we create this system of record which can be used for governance at both design time and runtime. And because of the wide variety of infrastructure services in place, it's really critical to have a common view of web services description and policy in order to manage and enforce those policies. And so one of the ways we think about this is that any given service is going to have a lot of data about it. It's going to have information on classifications. It's going to have policy information. Again, we're going to go into some details, examples here about what types of policies. It'll have specifications about the service itself, maybe just technical specifications. And then we have a series of governance processes at both development and runtime in which we want to leverage the various infrastructure services which are deployed throughout SOA. And these are going to be operating in a heterogeneous environment, and so it's critical for this all to be standards-based, to speak the same language, and to be able to have the agility that SOA allows us through things like external policy, declarative policy, which is going to allow us to make changes without having to dig into the code every time. So that's just a very, I'd like to turn it over now to Phil, and Phil is going to lead us through some specific use cases that sort of give you a little bit more color around what we're doing with governance and responsibility.
Thank you very much, Sean. As Sean said, what I'm going to try and do is cover off some more of the specific use cases, more from a enforcement vendor's perspective. Just to give you a little bit of information about Layer 7 and some of our products, and certainly not going to spend a lot of time getting into this. If you're interested, feel free to visit our website. But really what we have right now is we have three fundamental products and some variants within there. And I'm going to concentrate on two of these today and touch on one towards the end of the presentation. To simplify matters, you can think of our SecureSpan gateway as being an XML firewall or gateway. And that's traditionally what you would consider to be an enforcement point. This is an enforcement point that handles XML and web services traffic, which is certainly predominantly the mechanism being used to implement SOAs, at least today. And the SecureSpan manager is the adjunct to the gateway, where you actually do things like actually create and validate policy. And we're going to get into that a little bit more, so how that ties into the governance interoperability framework. And lastly, we have another component called the SecureSpan bridge. Now, Sean talked about how you can sort of make enforcement work at both as an intermediary and also as an interceptor, sort of sitting on the endpoint. And the SecureSpan bridge sort of falls into the interceptor category, but I'll talk about some specifics about where we're going to go with that in the future as well. First off, let's have a quick look at the SecureSpan gateway so we can sort of understand where it sits and then provide some context, I think, for the rest of the discussion. The gateway here is shown as the proverbial black box. In fact, it's available in a variety of different form factors, often implemented as an appliance. Securing web services in XML is often one of the first challenges that many customers face when they go to deploy a service-oriented architecture. And the gateway provides the capability to actually act as a proxy, if you will, for back-end services, and it applies various forms of policy, and I'll give you a little bit of color on what those are in a little bit. But you can basically think of it as an intermediary. It sits in the middle of the transaction. In theory, it should be transparent to everything if you really want to have a true loose coupling and flexibility that a service-oriented architecture can provide you. And the SecureSpan manager is used to administer and also provide policies for that gateway. Now, the SecureSpan manager really, when you really want to think about it, is nothing more than a console for our SecureSpan gateway. But it's a console that also has an environment in it where you create policies. Now, the word policy tends to be extremely overloaded. It tends to be very poorly understood. And frankly, it has many meanings depending upon the level of the stack that you're looking at. If you're looking at governance interoperability, policy means one thing. If you're looking at IT-level governance, it can mean another thing. Within the context of our domain, services firewalling, what the context of policy really means is more along the lines of security and some integration policy, that is, behavior around the services themselves. So the focus here is on the service. The service defined as being something which runs probably on an app service someplace and has some amount of business logic associated with it. So from an enforcement point sort of view, what does an enforcement point like our gateway have to do within a governance framework? And that's probably one of the more critical things to understand. First off, it obviously has to have some capability to read policies. You can't enforce something unless you have the ability to at least read a policy that perhaps is stored somewhere and was created by something else that you have no knowledge of. Also, it may be useful to have the ability to even create and store policies. And that's more of a local capability, that is, the ability to actually create a policy, store that someplace, and then read it back later, but certainly you have to start with a policy. Obviously, enforcing policies is probably one of the primary jobs. Identifying exceptions is an area which is absolutely critical. It certainly plays very strongly into the work that we're doing SystemNet around the government server interoperability framework. It's well and good to have a policy which executes well and follows behaviors that you would expect for a given service or transaction. For example, if I am properly authenticated, perhaps there are a variety of different services that I can access as part of my bank or as part of my insurance company. If for some reason there's an exception to one of those policies, that is, if I am either trying to do something that I shouldn't do, or if there's a notable example, for example, I'm doing a very large dollar transaction which may have to go through a separate auditing or control process, you typically want to identify those exceptions to something else. And I'm being intentionally vague here because something else could be anything. In a service-oriented architecture, the whole point here is that you get the flexibility and loose coupling to basically have anything talk to anything. So identifying an exception could go to a governance interoperability framework, it could go to some sort of auditing system, it could even just land as an email on someone's laptop screen. Also, the ability to act on those exceptions is critical as well. When an exception is actually flagged, you need to do something with it. That might require changing the enforcement model, or it might require sending notifications, as I talked about earlier. Reporting exceptions, which includes notification, but also includes the ability to summarize and provide some level of sort of aggregate view of what's going on with the service is very critical, as is obviously capturing an audit trail. Compliance and governance ultimately is not only about what happens at runtime, it's also what happens forensically. Can you go back in and either prove that transaction did or did not take place, i.e. sort of non-repudiation, or can you at least diagnose what the problem was and then correct that or amend or augment your policy to actually cover that situation? And again, I want to come back to sort of the policy definition again, is that enforcement points only enforce policies within a specific context. Our context is quite a bit different than the enforcement point that you might consider, let's say, as a web firewall. Web firewall is a very different thing. Specific applications that provide some level of enforcement do something else entirely different. So they have a sort of a limited knowledge, if you will. They can only see a certain snapshot of what's actually going on in an end-to-end business process. And that's really critical when we start looking at some of the work that we're doing with SysNet around the GIFs. Another way to sort of slice this, and it's somewhat arbitrary, and I'm going to talk about this a little later as well, is that you can think about this reading and creating and storing policies as really a design time activity. It's something that you think through. You probably have some kind of procedure or process within your organization which says, here's how I create a policy. This is a policy that reflects compliance to the following internal policies, and those policies are typically written on paper, and they're stored someplace in a document management system because there has to be controls, auditable controls here. And these policies are instantiated, again, within the context of the enforcement point. At runtime, obviously, things like enforcing policies, identifying and acting on exceptions are absolutely critical. And certainly in a service-oriented architecture, as much as possible, you'd like to push those decisions out to a runtime environment. Why? Well, one of the big issues that you're going to run into in service-oriented architectures are that it's quite conceivable that by using things like XML and web services to create very flexible applications, if you design in too much policy actually into the business logic, or if you provide too much capability to enforcement in the actual applications themselves, what you end up with what we call a tightly coupled SOA. It somewhat defeats the purpose of having that flexibility of real infrastructure, and you actually want to be able to push that someplace where it can be enforced in real time, which has a lot of requisite performance issues as well. And then from a diagnostic perspective or forensic perspective, you want to do things like reporting exceptions and obviously capturing that audit trail. And if you think about it, those are three very distinct activities in terms of time. Design time means something that probably happened in the past with a lot of planning. Runtime means something which is, you know, basically happening now. And the diagnostic element is really the combination of the interception of the two. That is, in applying my design time rules in a runtime environment, what was the result and can I look at that result? And certainly from an auditing and compliance, by compliance I mean statutory compliance perspective, that's very, very important when you're trying to comply with things like Sarbanes-Oxley or HIPAA or one of the many other regulations that are now being imposed upon everybody. So Sean said we have a number of different sort of use cases that we've thought about, and this has been probably the product of a lot of conversations, not only between ourselves and people like SysNet, but also a lot of conversations with customers and, you know, 3 or 4 years experience in seeing exactly where customers are on sort of the SOA adoption lifecycle. And everyone's at a slightly different point. Everyone, you know, has more or less similar sets of problems at a very generic level and sort of approaches this in a stepwise fashion. So I'm not going to say that this is the only sort of path that a customer or prospect will follow, but I want to sort of layer upon sort of the complexity and give you an idea of what governance interoperability framework really buys us. So a lot of customers, when they start off deploying web services or for the first step of their solo environment, and they only have a couple services that sort of, you know, wet their feet a little bit and understand what's going on, they will have typically what we call local policy control. And this is really, truly runtime enforcement with a design time policy. That is, they sit down, they create a policy that's stored in the enforcement point, and that enforcement point acts on this policy. It's a very common model in the XML firewall space. You'll see this model adopted by some of our customers using the Secure Span Gateway, as well as customers of other competitive products that are out there, or even products that are in slightly different spaces that behave similarly as an intermediary. And the whole idea here, again, is that we use it as an intermediary. We are intercepting messages and data as it goes through our gateway, and we create policies which act upon those. And policies generally consist of something as simple as access control. That is, the identity of the application or human that you're coming in must match the following list. Based on the following list, we provide you with the following entitlements, and we behave accordingly. So that might include, as Sean put it earlier, transforming messages if there's a versioning issue or if there's specific fields in the messages that need to be obscured for compliance reasons or perhaps for security reasons, as well as determining where to route those messages to. That's often half of the battle, is just taking a message in and understanding, okay, this is headed for a generic large service, perhaps my insurance broker service. But in my insurance broker service, I may have 30 or 40 different operations, and depending upon the combination of the message coming in, content within that message, and the identity making that request, I may need to route it to a different point, and I may need to enforce different security requirements or different compliance requirements in terms of auditing, in terms of exception handling, perhaps even in terms of what I do with responses that go back towards the client. I may need to log every single transaction for an audit path. That's typically the sort of thing that you do in this kind of an environment. So it's a very simple application of an enforcement point. First, use case one, if you consider the previous use case, kind of use case zero or ground zero, if you will, is really to try and now leverage some of the standards that are out there. In particular, in this case, I'm going to be showing leveraging UDDI standard, some ability to have policy reuse, some ability to have auditing of policy at some level, and maybe even a little bit of version control. So I call this local policy reuse. And this isn't radically different from sort of the ground zero implementation, except here what we're now doing is we're storing our policies in a repository. In this particular case, we're showing the SysNet policy repository. That's probably being done through standards like UDDI, but in fact, that policy repository could have just about any form of metadata. And as Sean pointed out, it's really, you know, data about the data. It could be policies, it could be actual addresses of service endpoints, it could be a variety of different things which is stored in this policy, and presumably subject to some form of control. Now, we don't show the control mechanism, again, in this diagram, just, you know, I am, again, speaking from the sort of the policy enforcement perspective here. But presumably there would be a mechanism for getting policies or metadata into that repository, and certainly our gateway is capable of putting data into that repository as well as reading data out. So again, similar kind of environment as before. You may author policies on the gateway themselves. They get stored in the repository, potentially even subjected to some form of workflow control. But again, it's a very simple model. We're applying effectively a static policy. The policy is stored, and we just apply it. The next use case is getting a little bit more complex. Now we're getting into the world of sort of policy management. And another way to think about this is beginning to layer a little bit of workflow and a little bit of process on top of how policies are created, stored, and enacted upon. And as you can see here, the little wrinkle that we have here is now instead of authoring the policies directly on the enforcement point, you probably have some kind of policy management system. It could be very simple. It could be very, very complex. That policy management system would instantiate a policy within our gateway, would talk to the SysNet policy repository and pull down that policy. Now, this is a bit of an abstraction from, you know, the sort of previous few use cases that we've seen, because now what we've done is we're trying to abstract the design time element of policy away from the runtime enforcement. And as Sean showed earlier on some of his diagrams, this is sort of gradually flowing towards this concept of having these separate processes or these governance interoperability processes that we can layer together as part of our framework or on top of our framework to actually get real solo governance. So this is an interesting point here. I'd say the policies are created by the policy manager. and the enforcement point acts on those policies. So as far as the enforcement point is concerned, there is no change in behavior here. Now, there are some subtle details, and the subtle details are exactly what we were alluding to earlier, is that in the past, this was a very, very difficult thing to actually achieve, even something as simple as this. Primarily because the standards and specifications that were out there for things like policy, the exchange of metadata, and a lot of other standards and specifications that are required to actually make this work in an interoperable fashion simply didn't exist. The industry probably wasn't mature enough back in the early days of certain web services geared towards SOA. There was a lot of sort of political brinkmanship going on between, you know, large vendors, and that can cause some issues for anybody. But now what's happened is there's been quite a bit of progress in terms of not only standards around, you know, sort of basic functions like security, things like that, but now there's a great body of work around standards and specifications talking about not only how you store metadata, but how you exchange metadata, how you actually query something to understand what metadata might be there, the forms of data, in fact, even the actual nature of the transaction itself, all of the things that you need to layer upon to actually have interoperability between a product from one vendor, like SystemNet, and a product from another vendor, like Nordic 7, and possibly a product from a third vendor, who might actually supply some kind of management system or some kind of auditing system or something else. Now, where policy management starts getting interesting is when you sort of extend that enforcement model. And this gets interesting because now what you're doing is you're blurring the line between design time and runtime. I had a great conversation yesterday with Daryl Plummer from Gartner, who argues that in a service-oriented architecture, really the distinction between design time and runtime is purely artificial, that in fact there really is no difference between the two. It's a compelling argument because if you think about service-oriented architectures, the whole idea is that you don't sort of hard code a lot of things. The whole idea is to have something which is adaptive and flexible and, dare I say it, loosely coupled. And that's a critical thing to really, critical goal to really have in a service-oriented architecture. So perhaps, you know, design time and runtime are artificial constructs after all, especially in an environment like the one I'm showing here. And what we've really done is build creating policies in our policy manager, reading them into our policy enforcement point. But what's happening now is that we're providing a feedback loop, and this is kind of the first step towards governance. And really what we're doing is we're having our secure snake gateway, in this case, provide an exception event. And if you like, this is compliance feedback. So something has happened in the policy. It may actually not be an exception per se. It may not be something that the policy doesn't cover off. It may merely be something that we recognize is an external stimulus that we want to provide to the policy management system. And that policy management system, in turn, may or may not decide to actually change the policy being enforced. So this is the critical point here. This has gone from simple runtime policy enforcement of a design time policy to what we would call adaptive enforcement. Now some other form of logic outside of our enforcement point is making a decision to change the policy. So, you know, before we look at this and say, wow, this is a great pipe dream, why would anyone ever do this? This doesn't seem like a real world to customers today who actually have implemented similar kinds of architectures. A very, very good example is one of our customers, a large telecom provider, actually requires the ability to enforce service level agreements. Now, telecoms are very familiar with service level agreements. It's how they provide class of service and quality of service on many of their offerings. In this particular case, there's a couple wrinkles. Again, in a true service-oriented architecture frame of mind, they provide services to their customers. And their customers are mobile telephony customers who use their mobile phones as effectively a portal into a variety of different services. Those services, things like sports scores or weather forecasts or perhaps even stock reports, are not actually provided by the carrier themselves. They're actually provided by other service providers. So this is actually a sort of a three-tiered model. And what the telecom provider needs to be able to do, they need to be able to enforce service level agreements not only from the consumers of the service, the actual, you know, wireless subscribers who perhaps subscribe to service plans, which gives them access to some kinds of data or perhaps limits how many times they can make requests or so forth. And they also have to provide a mechanism to enforce service level agreements between themselves and their service providers. Their service providers have stepped up to very specific contractual obligations that are incumbent upon the telecom provider, not exceeding certain thresholds and things like that. So this is a perfect role for an enforcement point. An enforcement point can collect whatever metrics are required to measure that SLA and can also enforce that SLA. That's a very powerful story. But what happens when the SLA is actually exceeded or not complied to or violated for that matter? What do you do? And how do you make that decision? Well, some of that logic you could theoretically build into the enforcement point, but again, the enforcement point only understands policy really within its own context, and it may have no knowledge of what's actually going on end-to-end in the system. So at that point, it makes a lot of sense to flag an exception and say, okay, this SLA has been violated, and effectively it's asking the question, which is, what do you want me to do? That exception violation would actually get flagged back to a policy management system, which based on possibly what was going on in the gateway, but often other statistics that it's gathering, would make a decision based on that, what to do with that policy. Perhaps it would tighten up the service level agreement thresholds. Perhaps it would loosen them up. Perhaps there's no issue there at all. And again, what you're really providing here is now you're providing the ability to have adaptive enforcement of policy. You're giving yourself the ability to have some dynamic control. And like I say, this dynamic control is not change the policy to whatever you want. The dynamic control really is adjusting thresholds around that policy. And certainly service level agreements right now are very tangible examples. Other tangible examples are seed certain dollar values, which might automatically be identified and then throttled and then ultimately enabled by some sort of external authorization or anything else that requires decision-making outside of the context of our enforcement point. Maybe it's even decisions made by another enforcement point. Who knows? So this is really, if you like, the beginnings of, you know, having a governance framework. You can take that a step further, which is sort of the next step that we're implementing in SystemNet. And now you recognize not only do you have, you know, compliance feedback coming back from our enforcement point, but now you have SystemNet's governance interoperability framework have the ability to also get feedback from other systems or metadata from other systems. And if you look at some of Sean's slides, you can kind of see how this all fits together. Now you truly have the ability to have governance within a much larger context. This is no longer about enforcement within a very specific context. This is now the ability to have compliance enforcement, which leads to a much broader governance. And in theory, if you can roll in a lot of other systems that might be related to the same business process, you now have the ability to build, you know, fairly rigorous, very, very rich, and very, very high-value policies, if you will, about governance as a whole. These are much larger policies than a single enforcement point would ever see. And it truly provides a lot of value in a service-oriented architecture because now you have the ability to think end-to-end. You have the ability to think across business processes, and I think that's a very important process. Where this gets interesting is when you start layering on not only intermediaries, but also interceptors. And our Secure Span Bridge is an interesting product. It's really sort of like an optional XML VPN client, and we initially used it for securely connecting integrations. The whole idea was that if you have a web services or an XML service that, you know, you're implementing as part of your SOAS derivative to not only enforce policy at enforcement point, but obviously you have to be able to comply to that policy from, for sake of argument, a client in a client server environment. How do you do that? Well, it turns out what you usually end up having to do is hard code in whatever compliance that you need to that policy. So if the policy tells you to use specific authentication methods and messages have to look like this and these fields have to be encrypted and signed and you have to use this trust mechanism, all of that has to be implemented at the client application. And we step back and we said, wow, wouldn't it be interesting if you had a healthcare application, kind of like a VPN client, where the VPN client would actually know what policy or what elements of policy were required to be complied to and could actually apply or transform messages on the fly in real time to comply to that policy. And that's the mechanism that we've actually implemented here. The wrinkle out of all of this, however, is that what we actually do is our policies at our gateway are actually stored as WS policy documents. And in this particular case, we actually flow securely the piece of that policy, the piece that the Secure Span Bridge, which is our VPN client or XML VPN client product, can actually enforce. We actually flow that down to the bridge. The bridge examines that, understands the differences between what the client's capable of doing and what the gateway expects to have for compliance with that policy. And now we actually have sort of a policy feedback here. We now have the ability to send back a chunk of policy and have that acted upon at an endpoint. If you think about the previous slide where we showed, you know, all of this interaction going on and all this feedback, this not only gives the ability to actually push a different policy into our gateway, but also gives our gateway the ability to push a different form of policy to an endpoint. And this is a pretty powerful model. This is one that we're still sort of exploring from a use case perspective to understand where the applicability might be. The initial indications are that this would be very useful in areas where we have silos. These could be application silos. It could be identity-based silos, possibly from companies that have been acquired or merged together. And for that matter, it could even be B2B-type partners. And in those kind of environments, it's very handy to have something like the bridge, which you know, basically just install on Windows or Linux or whatever operating system you have, a small piece of software, and have that ability to have that policy pushed all the way down to effectively one of the endpoints. Gives you a really interesting story around truly governance, because you're now beginning to govern this end to end. So I'd like to summarize a little bit some of the things I went through today, and then pass it over to Sean to sort of wrap up and layer this into the context of the governance or Garoppolo framework, you know, as a series of products. Certainly, you know, from our perspective, and again, you know, so speaking as a policy enforcement company. Certainly, SOA governance presents some pretty big enforcement challenges. One thing is that, you know, and we always try to tell customers this, there's a really big step between an enforcement point and implementing an overall business process. We form part of that process. The overall business process still has to be thought through very, very carefully. But ultimately, you're never going to do this with a single vendor. No single vendor out there is going to provide you with an end-to-end solution that's going to work within your infrastructure. I have yet to see, at least in the past few years anyway, I've yet to see a true greenfield environment where there's nothing there and a single vendor can step in and implement everything from end to end. In reality, what you require is some kind of sort of vendor-neutral or vendor-interoperable, I guess, governance framework. You require a true framework as opposed to a single product. And that requires careful management. And that management not only means that the framework itself has to have some form of management limited, but it's truly management kind of with a big M. You have to think through it. You have to adapt your business processes, or more importantly, make the governance framework fit your business processes that you have internally. Secondly, not all policies comes down to context. And you have policies throughout your organization, whether you realize it or not. If you go all the way down to the IT level, you could even say there's policies in your routers. But certainly there's policies in your layer 4 to 7 switches. There's policies that exist within your applications. There's policies that exist within your network management systems. And really, when you look at all of the combinations of different policies, from policy enforcement points, from endpoints, from management systems, you're going to have to kind of rationalize all of that. And the only way you're going to rationalize that is to have some lingua franca, have some ability to have standard compliant or specifications compliant metadata sitting somewhere. And that might require all kinds of adapters into legacy systems. It may require making systems that would not traditionally ever exchange data work together by having an intermediary. And that intermediary in this case is not so much a false enforcement point. That intermediary is really what provides the glue for governance and has the ability to provide things like the dashboarding you're going to require and also rationalization between policies and, more importantly, perhaps a way to manage all of that within some sort of workflow. And the last point I'm going to make, and it sort of speaks to what I talked about in the previous 2 points, is the real world is messy. Of any of the implementations that we have done with our customers, I can honestly say that none of them have actually been what I would call pure SOA environments. In every single case, what we have been doing with our customers is giving them some ability to layer service-oriented architectures on top of existing systems. Now, in some cases, there may only be a piece or two of their existing systems that you're using, typically the portals or the app servers. But in many cases, there might be a lot of pieces in between the identity management systems, the network management systems, layer 4 to 7 switches, which are very intelligent and can operate at sort of the SOA level to some extent. And making all of that work as an integration is tough. But making governance work in that environment in a lot of ways is even tougher. It's all that different. It's really all about making sure that you can enforce governance and measure governance in a way that makes sense for your processes and for your compliance issues internally, and then just finding the ways to, you know, gather the metrics that you need, find a way to report those in a way that makes some degree of sense. And again, it's all sort of about exception handling. It's all about being able to go back in there and do forensics. And frankly, although governance right now is sort of in its infancy in this SOA space, there's a lot of the components that are there. And it's, you know, a matter of some planning, but you can certainly layer all of those together and get something which is truly providing some degree of value. And with that, I'm actually going to pass it over to Sean, and Sean's going to talk a little bit about sort of the big picture view of how all of this fits into the governance interoperability framework and still in general, and then provide a bit of a wrap-up. Sean?
Thank you very much, Phil. So I really like the way that Phil laid out those use cases because it sort of shows an evolution. If we take a look of the big picture, I mean, you know, you can think about this idea of low policy control where you're creating your policies and you know perhaps you're using something like SecureSpan to help secure your web services. But the problem with that, if we maintain that architecture, is that if you could run into this issue of these silos of SOA. If you have everyone who's doing all their local policy controls, they're not reusing those, perhaps there aren't standards in terms of governance, that becomes an issue in terms of the policies themselves. Whereas if we can move to the end state that Phil talked about, which was more of this compliance, enforcement, and governed approach, then the picture starts to look like this whole thing here. So here, the idea is we have our services, and while we talk about web services quite a bit, by the way, that's not just a really, you know, there's a wide variety of assets in an SOA, and certainly there are various types of services. Maybe we want to get to web services over time, but before then, you're going to have EJBs, you're going to have various types of EAI infrastructure in place, you're going to have whatever that may be. For that matter, so we should consider that as well. However, what they all have in common is the notion of metadata. The idea of describing data about the data. How do we describe these services, their various aspects? And one form of metadata is policy, sort of a special form of metadata in a way. If we can then take all of this information, we can publish it to a central system of record. So now here we associate this metadata and policy with these services. We then have an infrastructure for change. We have an infrastructure which allows us to manage the change, the creation of policies, the services, and descriptions about those services in a governed way, have control points across that. We have the ability to easily find that information and share it with others across the enterprise and then take action on it. And now I've drawn two boxes here just to give you a little bit more kind of color into how this works. The SysNet Registry is this semantic index. So the SysNet Registry is what's tying this information together, pointing to these various policies and metadata and services, and providing that sort of catalog of information about it. We also have something that we've talked about called the SysNet Information Manager. This starts to actually provide that repository capability that Phil referred to somewhat logically in his slides about SysNet policy repository. That's where you actually store documents and be able to manage change of those physical documents. So that gives you a little bit of view into that. And then this gives us the ability to move into the runtime world where we can share the SecureSpan and actually have a feedback loop. So you can, I don't know if you can tell, but these arrows are bidirectional. So that feedback loop that we talked about is exactly here. And that applies for other management systems. Phil mentioned there might be other management systems in place, maybe system management, enterprise system management systems. So that gives you kind of a quick view. Again, we're trying to have closed policy, definition, enforcement, management of lifecycle, runtime enforcement, and then circle back to provide feedback into the system. So just to summarize, you know, GIF brings together the leading SOA vendors for management, security, integration, composite applications, and business intelligence, and offers proven interoperable solutions. So this leads to a simpler way to deploy a multi-vendor SOA. Well, if we don't think that one vendor can provide an SOA, we think that as demonstrated by this webcast series where we've had various partners involved, this is just the nature of the game. It's going to be heterogeneous, and so we need to work together, and that's really what the governance interoperability framework is all about. So in this way, GIMP enables and simplifies governance, compliance, and policy-driven solutions for an enterprise SOA. Finally, GIF provides transparency and visibility into all aspects of an enterprise SOA, offering managers, developers, and architects a simple view of all functional and non-functional information related to a business service.
So in this way, it improves the quality of information about the services. So just to close, quick commercial on SysDNet, why work with SysDNet? Well, we've certainly been in this market for quite a long time. We were first, really since the end of 99, 2000, first to market with many of the web and SOA infrastructure elements. We've developed a very large community of developers and architects we've gained over time. We do have a sixth generation registry product, which is really cornerstone to the governance and interoperability framework. And we've deployed in a lot of customers, and we have major ISVs and OEMs who are using our technology. Some nice quotes from folks here who are familiar with us in terms of our participation and standards. And I just can't underscore the partnership aspect of this enough, and I think that certainly great partners like Layer 7 are critical to this. So with that, we want to open it up now to questions in the last 10 minutes here. So Ian, perhaps you can help us moderate some of the questions here.
Sean, thank you very much indeed. And I'd like to extend a special thanks to Bill Wallstone from Layer 7 for joining us today. We do have quite a few questions, so there's certainly room for one or two more. So if you have questions, use the Q&A chat window, bottom right-hand corner of the browser. And we'll answer them in the order in which they were received. Now with that, let's go to the first question. And the question is, what standards are you referring to for metadata storage and exchange?
Okay, thank you, Ian. Let me take a first crack at this, and then certainly Phil, please, would love to get your answer as well. Actually, there are a couple of standards which are important here. Certainly one of them is UDDI in terms of the ability to exchange metadata to publish services, the ability of things like WS policy attachment with UDDI to actually attach policy documents to services. And on top of that, there are technical notes that organizations like OASIS have produced, which even go beyond the fundamental standards. So, for example, if we take standards like WSDM, and that actually gets to a later question here, I see, we can see that there are mappings that have been put in place. WS security is certainly important, and this allows us to exchange this type of, to have this ability to cross-reference and map all that together. Now, the storage aspect is an interesting question, because when we have a repository, first of all, I think that there are going to be a number of repositories throughout an enterprise, so certainly our architecture is to have the ability to synchronize and cache with other repositories throughout an enterprise and to create that system of record by doing so. But we also think the secret sauce in SOA, as I've heard I think Ann Thomas May say it, is XML, and I think that's a nice way to think about it. And so therefore, we need to have a repository standard which is particularly oriented towards that, and that for us, we think, is XQuery. So this just gives you a little bit of insight into our view of key standards. So Phil, any comments on
that? Yeah, Sean, I would definitely agree with some of the standards and specifications you mentioned, like WSDM, like WS policy, WS security policy, and even something as arcane as WS metadata exchange. That's a mouthful. I think the important thing to realize is kind of what I talked about earlier, and I think kind of what Sean's been alluding to, is that there is no one single standard or specification, and it's almost like a stack. And it's no different than any other stack that you've probably experienced in your life. There's a stack for determining, how you would trust an entity. There's a stack for determining how you actually exchange data. Then there's a stack for determining, what data you're actually, or part of stack, where it's just determining what exact data you actually are exchanging. And in reality, to deal with all of the different vendors that are out there and all of the different types of elements and systems that you have to talk to, there's going to have to be a wide variety of these things implemented within the governance and profitability framework. Good news, as I said earlier, standard specifications have really moved a very long way, even in the past year. So it's all very, very hopeful that we can sort of broaden this over time. But there's a bunch of good specifications out there today, and vendors like ourselves and, frankly, our competitors are all sort of implementing these value within a governance framework.
Thank you very much, Phil. Before we go on to the next question, just a quick reminder, our next webcast, Top 5 Governance Issues, is this Thursday, hosted by Zapthink. We also have a new white paper, SysDNet, SOA Governance, Balancing, Flexibility, and Control. You can get that free from our website. And those of you lucky enough to make the trip south to Orlando, Florida next week can see us at the Gartner Conference there, booth number CC. So please stop by if you're going to make the trip. The next question is, How are CEOs, CFOs responding to SOA adoption in view of its many benefits to ensure governance and compliance?
Sure. Again, I think that's a great question. I'm sure, Phil, you'll have a perspective on this as well. Well, I think that this is something that is of great interest to CXOs, and I think the evidence is, again, companies I mentioned, Motorola as one, but there's others. We just announced something with Starwood where they've taken a big enterprise-wide SOA initiative. In the case of Motorola, for example, they've got 500 internal web applications alone in which they need to authenticate people. So the ability to have shared services and have governance around those really gives them tremendous flexibility. It gives them, reduces their risk. It does a lot of great things. There's a global financial conglomerate who we published in a paper with Hurwitz, interviewed this company as well as another major Wall Street firm. That paper is on our site if you're interested in more details. But they certainly talk about the ability to really bridge that gap between corporate governance and IT governance and to use metadata and workflow to automate that process. Now, by the way, I also want to mention the other side of this, which is the same that SOA raises in this area. So when you do have these monolithic applications, at some level, it's tightly controlled, and so therefore governance in some ways becomes easier. And so when you now break that apart into a whole bunch of services, you have to figure out, well, how am I going to govern this distributed environment? Now, one way that Roman Stonek, who's the founder of SysNet, talked about this quite well, is that in the world of the mainframe, that's where we had it. We had very centralized everything, and so therefore agility was signed. In the world of client-server, we had really distributed everything, and therefore you could run out of control. He talked about DLL hell. And so now SOA brings us back into balance in the sense that we can have centralized governance and distributed control. And that's really what we talked about today, where we can have centralized policy management and the storage and all of that, and yet we can distribute the enforcement of that with companies like Layer 7. Phil, anything to add on that?
Yeah, I think that's a fundamental point. I think a lot of our customers, be it in financial, telecom, government defense, healthcare, outsourced accounts, pick one, they all think in terms of governance eventually. And it's almost like it's an epiphany. The epiphany that often happens is they say, oh, great, service-oriented architecture, that's going to solve a lot of issues that we have today and really position us well for the future. But then they think about it and say, wow, with all of this potential for loose coupling, for all this potential for independent development and all of these other wonderful things that you can get with SOA, we could run into a real governance management issue. And then typically they sort of progress to that third stage where it's kind of, aha, wait a second, we've got a SOA that we're going to implement. Why not use the SOA basically to manage itself? Use SOA itself to provide the elements of the framework that can provide us for the governance of the SOA. And it sounds like somewhat of a circular argument, but it's a progression we've seen probably in a number of customer problems to a, wait a second, this has significant implications, we need to think through this, to a, wow, we can actually use the infrastructure that we're building, we can use the architecture that we're putting together for service orientation, and actually leverage that back into governance. So I think that Sean pointed out, people are beginning to realize that there is a balance here, and the balance is actually probably going to be pretty good.
Thank you very much, Bill. Next question is, how many vendors are Git-compliant, particularly XML gateway appliances?
Great. So there are currently 10 partners in the GIF, and this spans really a wide variety of infrastructure services. And let me take the opportunity, only 1 minute left here, but I know a lot of people get confused about this, and I think it's a good time to clarify what GIF is. So GIF is a partnership initiative. It has these 10 companies who agreed to work together. It's also a set of standardized mapping. So we're taking the standards that we talked about, and then we're applying range in between one another. And then it's a set of APIs and tools developed on both sides to make the deployment of this simpler. So basically the idea is that if we didn't work together, sure, you could deploy this information, these infrastructure services, you could create the use cases that we talked about on your own, I suppose, but you'd have to reinvent that every time. So what we've done is we've actually standardized that. We've worked together to agree on the approach. Some of these may actually go to standards bodies if it's appropriate, but perhaps just as importantly, the fact that a wide variety of vendors have agreed. And by the way, there are a lot more vendors who want to be in GIF than who are in GIF, because we do have a certain sort of bar of participation in terms of actual development work and contribution from both the marketing and engineering side. So we certainly will likely extend it over time. So I don't think we have any more time for any more questions. But let me pass it back to Ian to conclude.
Sean, right. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to again just thank both of the speakers today, Sean Klein from Systernet, and Phil Wallstone, Senior Product Manager at Layer 7 Technologies. Thank you very much indeed, Phil, for joining us today. Final reminder, if you would like, some of the slides, and several of you have asked for that, send an email to marcella@systernet.com. That's marcella@systernet.com, and we'll send you a deck of the slides that you saw today. Our next webcast is this Thursday, hosted by ZapThink. And a final reminder, a new white paper, SOA Governance, Balancing, Flexibility, and Control, is available from Systernet's website. Thanks again to both speakers, and thanks all for everyone for attending. Goodbye.